Engage for Success Radio, raising the profile of employee engagement and shining a light on good practice for people who believe there's a better way to work.
Welcome to Engage for Success Radio and show number 561 in our weekly series. Engage for Success is a not-for-profit movement and the UK's leading voice on the topic of employee engagement. We're out there raising awareness and running events through our area networks right around the country. And our topic and sector-specific thought and action groups are developing research, publishing case studies, and shining a light on all the great practice that's going on. Now, you can visit engageforsuccess.org to learn more. And while you're there, why not sign up for our weekly newsletter so you never miss out on any of our great free resources, events, and updates. And I'm Andy Gorham, your host for today's show and founder of BizJuicer, the employee engagement and culture change consultancy that helps growing organizations attract, keep, and develop great people. And today, we're diving into a fascinating topic that I think could transform the way you think and lead. It's metacognition. Now, if you're not too sure what that is, I wasn't either until recently, but it's associated with our ability to think about our thinking. And our guest today is Steve Scannon, a coach, speaker, an expert who's spent over 30,000 hours working on one-to-one with business leaders and executives to improve performance and give them an edge. He's the founder and CEO of Rewire, which is a company that helps individuals and teams tap into the science of metacognition to achieve radical performance improvement, both professionally and personally. And today, Steve's going to be our guide on what I expect to be a whistle-stop tour of understanding what metacognition is, why it should even matter to us, and then share some of the practical ways to harness and practice it to give us our own edge. So if you ever wondered how the way you think affects your ability to lead and inspire lasting change, you've come to the right place. Welcome to the show, Steve. Great to have you here.
Andy, it's a true honor. True honor to be on your program.
Loving this topic. I do love a topic that I know or seem to know very little about. And so I'm really looking forward to speaking to you. You're an expert in metacognition, but before we kind of get into all that jazz, do me a favor, Steve, will you? Can you give us a little bit of a better introduction to you and what you do than I did in the intro?
Oh, I don't know. I thought you did great. You made me sound so good. I wanted to hear me, and I'm usually trying to get away from hearing me. I don't know. I obviously, to your listeners, they're going to know that I'm from the States. I live in this great state of Oregon, which from the great scheme of things, sometimes I'm explaining even in the United States to people where that is, but it's above California. People seem to remember where California is, but we're in the Pacific Northwestern part of the United States. I live here with my wife. We have four kids, two grandkids. Look, I love to play golf, be outdoors. I've run marathons. I'm fairly active as a human being. But I've been an executive coach for the better part of 2.5 decades. And I got into this after a fairly prolific business career where I actually owned 2 or 3 businesses and bought and sold some stuff and learned about coaching. And given my passion for athletics and my athletic background, I got into coaching.
Nice.
But just very, very briefly, I will tell you that coaching, as I know many people in England and Great Britain understand that coaching is sort of still the Wild West.
Mm.
Right. Like if you tell someone you're a dentist, everyone's like, okay, well, I know exactly what you do. If you say you're a coach, what I've noticed is a lot of people have different perspectives on that. Oh, well, you do this or you do that or you do this or you do that. And so it's still very much the Wild West. when I got into coaching, my very first job in the field, I was there for 13 years and it was a wonderful company. It was very much about telling people what to do and then holding them accountable. But a very short time into it, I shouldn't say that, 5 years into it or so, I started to realize that I was mostly interested in the dynamic of human change.
Mm-hmm.
If someone had a goal, Andy, if you have a goal and you want to change something, well, you have to change, right? You can't just have a goal. Goals exist because we need to change something. And so I started to grow in my interest of what really created lasting, sustainable human change. And because of that and kind of the personality that I have, it ended me in doing a lot of research and study. I went to UCLA and got certified in interpersonal neurobiology, and I'm into neurochemistry, which led me to metacognition. And then in 2013, I started Rewire, which was a coaching company, which is primarily about mindset coaching and not necessarily just action-based coaching and or behavior modification. Because In our little world, we tell people if you don't change the way you think, you won't probably change the way you act. So we've been running, my partner and I have a business partner in Maryland. We have 18 or 19 coaches around the country who are all certified at the Neuro Leadership Institute and the Institute or the ICF, the International Coaching Federation. And so we take coaching pretty seriously. We're not just making it up. We take a fairly academic approach to this. And certainly the topic that we want to bring to the table today is metacognition and how that interplays with what we do as coaches. So I don't know if that's more great, of an introduction, mate, than what you wanted.
No, look, 100%. I mean, you live in a wonderful part of the world. Oregon, athletics, Nike, coaching. My goodness me. It's all good. It's all going to link in here today. And what I also love, and anybody that listens to me on this show knows, I do love a bit of science. I am not a scientist, but I love a bit of science. I'm hugely curious about neuroscience. So I'm really looking forward to this chat today. So look, the metacognition, you've just explained, your colleagues, you're all experts in it. But for listeners who may not be as genned up on it and not familiar with it, how about let's start nice and gentle for me. Can you start by explaining what it is in some pretty simple terms and why perhaps when we think about thinking, it might differ slightly from the usual kind of topics of self-awareness or being reflective, perhaps?
Yeah. Well, in the simplest of terms, I thought you did a great job. Meta is usually a Greek prefix. I don't know why. You know, when neuroscience, really any science for that matter, is create something, words like metacognition get carried over from the academic world. Maybe it's because those people want to sound smart or whatever, but they carry over these words from that world. Meta is really a Greek prefix. That the best that I can do with that is say it. I always think of the word about. So it's referencing the second thing it's talking about. So if you're in the information sciences world or the IT world and people talk about the metadata, metadata is the data about the data.
About the data, yeah.
Okay, so meta, when I hear the word meta, I think something about something, right? Like it's just that word about. So metacognition. Cognition is just a fancy word for thinking.
Yeah.
Now, you asked for a simplified thing. So I'll just end with the simple thing, thinking about thinking. That's what metacognition is learning to think about how we think. But it begins to open the door because one could ask, what is thinking? Are emotions part of thinking? Is only reason part of thinking? Like, what do we mean by thinking? And I think that's a fair question, specifically as it pertains to the practice of metacognition and what we're talking about.
Well, let's dive below the surface level then, shall we? You've mentioned to me in a previous conversation that this is, well, for anybody, it's a good thing to understand and to lean into. But for leaders particularly, it can be a very, very powerful tool. And so if we are going to go deeper into it, you've mentioned reasoning and emotions. And so where does this practice really help leaders in particular, thinking of our audience today? What is it that this thing can give them? How is it going to help them?
Well, again, if you're a leader, and I suspect that many people listening to your show are leaders and they're helping other people and whatever, I think it's very common, and maybe it's okay, Andy, to presume that you, as a leader, want to think that tomorrow can be better than today. That when we have a growth-oriented mindset, if you're listening to a program called, Engage for Success, I suspect that success looks like something that you don't currently have today. So I'm just pointing out that as a leader, you have a goal, you have an idea, you want to grow, you want people to grow, you want your organization to grow. There's something there. So even as a leader, and I'll give you two sayings, one of them is from Albert Einstein. Albert Einstein said, and again, I might not get this verbatim, and he might have said it in German anyway, but he said, you cannot create solutions or you cannot solve problems with the same consciousness that created them.
Mm.
You can't solve problems with the same consciousness that created them. So if goal orientation as a leader is helping people achieve goals and getting there, but we all bring the same mindset to the table without thinking any differently, how would we ever achieve any goals outside of some external thing happening to us, right? Interest rates could do this, banks could do that, economies could do this, and you could feel like you did something, but that's not, we are hoping to be agents of our own success,
yeah.
I would hope. And so learning how to think differently. And so metacognition is a tool that we use to examine how we think. Okay. Now, it ends up being the reason you haven't heard of it, maybe. And other people are like, wow, what's that really all about? Is I had a professor one time say to me, he said, we all have addictions. Yep. Every one of us. If you're a human being, you're addicted to something. He said, but it's possible, he was very humble about it, he said, it's possible that the one addiction we share in common is the addiction to our own thinking.
Oh.
So, Andy, anything that you think in the moment you think it, I want you to know, it's like, this is biology. This isn't philosophy. You think you're right. There's an ancient Hebrew proverb that says all a person's ways seem right to them. So as a leader, if you think you're right about everything, I'm not saying you're not right about many things, but if you're right about everything, then you're going to stunt your own growth. And metacognition in some respects can be seen as the willingness to step aside from always thinking everything that I think is right and examine how I think. Because if I can do that and I can help other people do that, then we don't have to be subject to our own brain telling us everything we think we're right. Because if you're right about everything, then how do you ever achieve a goal outside, again, of some external circumstances happening? If we're going to be agents of that, then we learning how to go, wow, look at me. You know, I can only practice this with myself.
Sure.
Steve, I'm Steve, right? Steve, look at me think that. Right. Look at me feel that. I noticed coming into the show today that I, you know, this live show, and even though I've been doing this a long time, I felt a sense of nervousness. But rather than just not be aware of it, because you mentioned awareness stuff, I was like, wow, nervousness. That's so interesting. I wonder where that comes from. And that little inner dialogue that I didn't judge nervousness. I didn't say, get away from me. I noticed it. I observed it. In some ways, I had a dialogue with it that was objective, and it was sought to understand it through genuine curiosity and not eradicate it. And that right there is the practice of metacognition. So imagine a leader that's needing to go into something, correct something, achieve a goal, help people, send out a communication. Wonder if they would step back and go, wow, look at how I, you know, and again, it's not to say they're wrong, but the willingness to observe that could be one of the most transformational things that they could do in their leadership.
So we're thinking about and talking about a real consciousness of thought, right? Being present with those thoughts, questioning them, not just accepting them.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And again, I noticed that you're using the word thoughts, and I like the way you say it with your British accent. I say thoughts. You're like, I'm a dumb American. Your thoughts, which is beautiful. But is thinking, I think a cool way to begin to explore metacognition is use, I'll give you some neuroscience so that you can
Please,
talk about this.
You know, ready? I love this stuff, right? Let's go.
How about using your prefrontal cortex to make sense of your limbic system? In other words, higher level thinking and reasoning. Like when you practice metacognition, if you're asking questions like, I wonder why, or I wonder, look at that. That's so interesting. That's using your prefrontal cortex. The limbic system is generally when you hear that. And by the way, everything about the brain is so complex, I'm going to generalize. But the limbic system is primarily where we have emotions.
Yeah.
This gave rise to the entire field of emotional intelligence, which many of your listeners know quite a bit about.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So emotional intelligence, people that are highly emotional intelligent, it's not that they never get angry or sad or upset or whatever. They do. They just might practice metacognition better and understand the derivation of it, the meaning of it? Because if you don't understand it, then we end up making decisions based on some emotional output without questioning the emotion at all. And so one way to practice metacognition is not the only way, is if you're coming into a thing and you feel a sense of dread or fear or anxiety, which, by the way, is pervasive in our world these days, right? What if we could teach people to go, wow, anxiety, how interesting. I wonder where that comes from. You're not judging it. By the way, again, a couple of neuroscientific sayings that you'd be interested in. One is, if we can name it, we can tame it.
Nice.
And then the second, Carl Jung, the great philosopher, psychologist Carl Jung said, what we resist persists.
I love those.
So in other words, if you start to feel anxious and you say to yourself, here's metacognition, you're like, don't feel anxiety, don't feel anxiety, because nobody actually likes to feel anxiety. But by resisting it, it'll cling to you. So if you feel fear or anxiety or whatever, by trying to say to yourself, don't feel that, don't feel that, which is not what we teach in metacognition. Metacognition is more an exploration and a quick understanding of and noticing without judgment. Wow, look at me feel that. How interesting. And again, a quick understanding of where does that come from? What was said? How can I make a different sense of that when you're doing that? And by the way, it happens at the speed of a synapse. You don't have to sit around in a cave for an hour and a half and do this. You can do it rather quickly. And as you get better at it, and by the way, if you ever want to practice metacognition, just go get in a car, drive. I don't know about, again, I was in London a few months ago, by the way. Loved London and it was wonderful. Americans that go to London, you know, driving, I'm sure when you all come here, it freaks everybody out. But at least in the United States, it's this activity that somehow when you get behind the wheel of a car, you think you're the only person that knows how to do this activity. Yeah. Yep. And everybody else sucks. And why aren't the people doing this? And so when you get angry at somebody in a car, it's such a cool way to go, wow, anger. How interesting. You know, I wonder why I would do anger in that thing. And you can begin to explore that. And here's why.
Yeah.
Because it gives you options. If you don't do it and you just go with anger, then you're going to go down a road and do what you've always done and then back to your leader thing. If you do what you've always done, then don't sit around and wish for different results. But to explore our own thinking and go, whoa. And again, maybe start with emotions. Maybe you use your higher level thinking in the prefrontal cortex to explore what the limbic system is offering you. And if we could do that better and better, all of us, I think it can absolutely transform organizations, transform leaders. But here's what's really funny. I don't think metacognition is a particularly complex thing, maybe. I think people listening are like, I understand this. Practicing it is hard.
Is that what gives you the edge that we've talked about, Steve? The ability to make more sense of your reaction to things, the things that you are thinking through? Is it that ability to pause, make sense, take a choice that you believe is the edge? Or is there something else about this that you think is where metacognition will give you that edge on performance, whether it be personal or professional?
I 100% think it's the edge itself. There are different ways to practice metacognition. Metacognition is a relatively general term. If there are any athletes listening to this, professional athletes practice this and they hire sports psychologists. Yep. And I've done some of that work myself with athletes. Very, very similar thing, right? If you get on the pitch, as you all call it, and you're trying to perform at the highest level,
yep,
right? We all know that you ask any high performing athlete, Andy, ask any one of them, what percentage of you performing at the highest level is the physical skill that you bring to the table, and what percent of it is the mindset? If you could put that into percentages, what do the highest level skilled athletes tell you?
They must tell you that it's largely driven by mindset, right? Putting themselves in the space to be able to perform.
Exactly. Now, it doesn't mean you do have to have the skill.
Of course.
And there is a time to practice the
skill.
But
I would be representing
every
sport. So
that's exactly right. But at that level, it becomes, well, then how do I develop an even greater mindset? I know how to practice the skill. Go in, show up, run the drills, do the things, do it over and over and over and over. How do I go about doing something similar to that with mindset? And so metacognition is very much a skill to be practiced.
Yeah.
On and off the pitch. By the way, if you can get good at it in driving, again, maybe we'll be kinder, more thoughtful drivers, but that's not the point.
No.
The point is this is a buildable skill. And for your people who are trying to engage for success, what if we engaged in a way where we were able to examine our own thinking and it gave us choices and we could explore things? What if you, not just you as a leader, what if the people underneath you practiced metacognition?
Mm. I think that's really interesting because you can think of many conversations that you have with people. Let's say something like getting up in front of a crowd and presenting. Don't like that. Feel nervous about that. Feel incompetent. If you give in to those feelings, you're never going to stand up in front of those people, right? You're never going to be confident to present. But having that conversation with yourself or having someone enable that conversation for you, I guess, is exactly what we're talking about here. There's two sides to it, right? Having a friend, coach, ally, asking you the questions about how you're feeling, that's one way of doing it. The other is practicing just having that conversation with yourself, which is, I think, sometimes where people feel a bit weird about this stuff.
Well, you feel weird because, again, all a person's ways seem right to them. Why, if you're 100% right about everything, why would you ever be taught to ask yourself why you think that?
Yeah.
That's why it's an edge. That's why I think metacognition is, it really is the edge because, well, one, if you really got good at metacognition, so few people practice it. Because we're not taught to, and two, let's be honest, it's a little disconcerting, right? What if you ask yourself, wow, wonder where that comes from? Well, your brain's already given you a reason of why that comes from that. And so it's not so much a challenge. That's why you have to be careful doing this. You're not challenging yourself.
Mm.
You're only understanding yourself. But the conversation itself, right? So if I go out for a drive and somebody cuts me off or doesn't use their turn signal or whatever it is they do, and I think that person's a jerk, and I notice myself think that internally, I can examine that and go, wow, look at me think that. Steve, so interesting.
I got to ask you, though, because I know my own behavior, right? And mm-hmm. I think change is a hard thing. Changing behavior can be a very hard thing. And so what is it about metacognition that maybe helps people have more success changing behavior, changing habits that they have found previously hard to change?
Oh man, you put me on a 29-minute show and then ask me questions like that.
Sorry,
I have
man.
A 19-hour answer for you, 6 books and 2 dissertations. Like, oh my goodness. I think if I was to summarize it, I would say metacognition, the greatest benefit is options.
Mm.
The greatest benefit is options. If you're trying to change behavior, you need options. And people that don't practice metacognition, if you just think a thought, feel a feeling, and you're unwilling to explore it, it's very likely there is a cause and effect to that feeling. It will have an effect on your actions.
Yeah.
So if you want different actions, but you're unwilling to practice metacognition, there's nothing that leads me to believe that that you don't have options. You're going to feel a certain thing. So back to your point, hey, I need you to go speak in front of crowds differently. Just go do that. That's, by the way, sometimes people give advice to that. Just go do
just
it.
Go
suck
do
it up, you know, right? Just go do it. Well, and we tell people that. It's amazing how often we just do this and just do that and just do this, as opposed to helping someone understand the derivation of that emotion and not eradicating it, because what we resist persists.
Yeah.
So what if you could go out there and go, wow, I noticed that I feel this nervous energy. I notice that I feel that. That's a very different internal language than I'm nervous.
Yeah.
You see, I'm nervous or I'm worried literally is using the verb to be. You have effectively attached your emotions to who you are as a person. So you can't detach that. And so your actions are going to be tied to that as opposed to, I notice that I feel nervous. When we can practice that language, we have options. Well, that's interesting. What if this and what if that? Options. Options. And I think that when we have those options, we can exercise a form of, I think, some of the greatest humanity. I mean, I think it's what is the essence of what can cause us to change. It's not the only thing, right? There's a great saying that says people change under one of three circumstances. They've either heard it, had it, or hurt.
Yeah.
Okay. So someone comes to you and is like, hey, you know, exercise is good for you. And it's the 57th time you've heard that. Like, finally, it clicks. You've heard it enough times. You've had it. I'm fed up with something. I've had it. I'm fed up with it. And I've had it. And now you change. Or you've hurt. You might change some behavior when you get a diagnosis. Well, metacognition can transcend that. If you want to wait until you're in pain, like you didn't grow the company, you didn't get a result, you didn't whatever, you didn't win the game, and you can wait for pain to change, and pain is a great change agent. But you didn't have me on the show to that's not a very good program. Yeah, just wait till you suffer enough and then you might change. Like, who wants to subscribe to that?
No.
But we will change under those circumstances. If you want to be proactive and not wait for those things to happen, metacognition is at least one way that I think is a game-changing way to practice a way to change. And if you don't want to do this, great, wait for pain, then you might.
There's also always some attachment of emotion, though, right, to trigger that decision, to trigger that action.
Well, emotions are a good way to start. And by the way, it doesn't always have to be negative emotions.
No.
Hey, I notice, like the first time I spoke with you, I was like, I noticed that you're a really pleasant person. And I noticed that there was an ease at which I could talk to you. I just noticed that. Like, I felt at ease. Like, isn't that interesting? I by the way, I didn't even choose to go, oh, I love him. Or I didn't go to that. I just noticed how it made me feel. And that's just a practice that we can practice without judging. If you begin to judge it, like I like it or I don't like it, you'll be spinning in your head in no time. And head spinning is not the point of metacognition. It's head understanding. And when you do, I think you really get an edge. I really do believe you get an edge.
That's the thing I'm definitely taking from this conversation. And I haven't never had enough time to talk to you about this, even in the chat we've had previously and today, never had enough time. But in the last couple of minutes that I have with you, Steve, and you've given lots of advice and lots of wonderful insights today, but if anyone out there wanted to start improving their use of this today, what is one small change you think they could start with from the get-go?
And I do this exercise a lot with my own clients, but I would have anyone listening who is serious about this, and I hope people are, I would have them start with a pet peeve. Start with a pet peeve. Pet peeves. Again, I hope we're living in the same English speaking world. And that means something to you guys. But a pet peeve is a small little thing that bothers you. The toilet paper backwards. Somebody chewing their gum wrong. You know, whatever it is. Start with something small that bugs you. Make a list of all your pet peeves. Pick one. And just practice metacognition around that. Why does that bother you?
Brilliant.
I'm not asking you for it to just all of a sudden be okay. It's not about it being okay. It's primarily notice how it makes you feel and just make a note of it and be willing to go, that's so interesting. Look at that. And the reason I pick a pet peeve, because you said a step into it, because if you start with sometimes huge things, like why does my mother-in-law get under my skin? You know, I made that one up. I don't know. Maybe that doesn't happen. That might be one that's pretty deep and whatever. So start small. But by the way, this is really cool. You can, athletes know this. You can get on the pitch. You can get on the court. You can do it in a game. But what they're trying to do is practice doing it, you know, when they go to a restaurant and they notice something.
Brilliant.
At smaller levels, because it is a skill to be practiced, and practice it at small things. Practice it in things, but pick one that is emotionally charged. It doesn't have to be the greatest thing that makes you upset or whatever, or that they small little emotions. Whoa, look at that. I noticed that.
I love that.
I'm noticing it.
Steve, thanks so much for sharing your thoughts and your insights and your experiences with us today. I have really appreciated it. And if people want to find out a little bit more about you, get in contact, where can they go, Steve?
Yeah, Rewire Inc., R-E-W-I-R-E-I-N-C is the name of our organization. I'm not hard to find on LinkedIn. That seems to be our choice of social media platforms. But our website is rewireinc.com. And I would love to, you know, I can personally get back with people. I have a team of people that do that, but love to help anyone that wants to give us a call.
Brilliant, Steve. Thanks ever so much. And that's just about all the time we have today. Don't forget to visit engageforsuccess.org to check out the show notes and all our fab free engagement resources, where you can also download or stream any of the great shows from the archive at Ilya as well. We'll be back again at the same time next week. I'm Andy Gorman. Thanks for listening to Engage for Success Radio.
Engage for Success Radio, raising the profile of employee engagement and shining a light on good practice for people who believe there's a better way to work.